Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are so iconic that I just say Famous Amos and it's like I can taste it. Each cookie is filled with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. And the word satisfying is very key there because some cookies are crunchy and brittle, and I don't like that. But Famous Amos has a deep, tooth-sinkable, satisfying crunch that I know and love. And Famous Amos classic bite-sized chocolate chip cookies are bringing back the original recipe that everyone knows and loves. One perfect bite, everything classic in a cookie. Find Famous Amos cookies anywhere you buy your favorite snacks. This episode contains explicit language.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Cooking with Brain Injury. Today, we'll be cooking with brain injury. I mean, cooking salmon with brain injury. No, the salmon doesn't have a brain injury? Well, I don't have its head anymore. I just mean that we have a brain injury. Bill and me. We're brain injured. How about that?
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. We are back from our pasta odyssey. It's been an incredible couple of weeks. We dropped a short update last week. We're planning a full episode to fill you in on the latest. That'll be out in a few weeks. But right now, it's back to our regularly scheduled programming. The person you heard at the start of the show is Cheryl Green. She's a multimedia artist in Portland, Oregon. She makes documentary films, videos, and podcasts that focus on how people with disabilities live their lives day to day. Cheryl's own experience informs her work because she has a traumatic brain injury, or TBI. The CDC defines a traumatic brain injury as a disruption in the normal function of the brain that can be caused by a bump, blow, jolt to the head, or penetrating head injury. How did you come to have a traumatic brain injury?
I'm going to see if it's okay with you if I don't answer that question. This is a really tough one because part of the brain injury culture is to tell that story with a lot of detail. And I work really hard to not tell that story unless it's actually relevant to the other parts of the conversation. And I totally respect where the question's coming from, but what you have, Dan, is the opportunity to show people that a brain injury story can be complete without hearing the trauma part of the story.
Cheryl's response to my question is very much in line with the way she approaches her work. She's less interested in how people got their disabilities, and much more interested in how they live their lives today. Of course, eating is a big part of anyone's day-to-day. After a TBI, a person may have to relearn how to cook and eat, or adapt to doing it with certain accommodations. In that video you heard at the start of our show, Cooking with Brain Injury, Cheryl gives a taste of what it's like to cook while living with a disability. And she does it with a heavy dose of satire and deadpan humor. The whole video parodies traditional cooking shows, with Cheryl and her friend Bill standing behind a kitchen counter, ingredients in front of them, looking into the camera.
Okay, Bill, tell you what. Why don't we start by seasoning the fish on both sides?
Bill starts looking for the salt, but then he notices Cheryl hasn't moved. She's talking silently to herself, like she's trying to figure something out.
Great. That was the planning phase. We mentally rehearsed the steps to seasoning the fish, and now we're ready to do it. Don't worry, a qualified speech-language pathologist...
The video is packed with these kinds of inside jokes for people living with traumatic brain injuries.
And an occupational therapist can help you learn how to cook in a simulated kitchen just like this one.
But this is a real kitchen. It's not simulated. I did the simulated kitchen as an outpatient, and this isn't one of those. I mean, there's no one-way mirror.
I gotta say, I hate those mirrors. Mm-hmm. People always think they're hiding back there, but you can hear them coughing and clearing their throat. Ugh.
Eventually, it's time to cook. Cheryl starts salting the salmon.
But in summary, salt and pepper. You can always find them easily, they're always fresh, and they're always in season.
Get it? Salt and pepper are in season, like seasoning? Cheryl's reaction to this line may seem to some to be outsized, but this kind of uncontrollable laughter is not uncommon for people with a TBI who may struggle to regulate emotions. For people watching this video who have similar experiences, this laughter will feel familiar.
Oh my God, that was a joke. That was hilarious. I didn't even see that one coming.
Then things take a kind of dark turn. Cheryl's looking at the fish, and you just see in her face she's not sure what to do next. She can't find the pepper, so she just keeps adding more salt, not knowing what else to do. Then she just kind of loses it.
Cheryl?
What?
What are you doing?
I'm doing the salt. You know what? I am up to my ears with this fucking salt if you want to know the truth. And I hate salt. I hate fish. And my stomach hurts, and I'm not eating.
Oh, well, I'm allergic to seafood.
And that's when the most surprising thing of all happens. Bill takes control. He's been aloof for most of the video, hasn't said much. He even went out for a cigarette in the middle of filming. But now it's his time to shine.
From here, folks, you want to cook it 5 minutes per side per inch of thickness. Don't flip too soon. This takes patience. The fish should lift easily from the pan when you flip it. You can test to be sure it's done by poking it with a fork. If it's flaky and doesn't look raw anymore, then it's done. It's ready to eat. Just season with salt and pepper to taste.
So is the salmon a success? No. Even though Bill gives a perfect description of how to cook the salmon, he doesn't actually finish the job. Instead, he reaches into the oven hoping to find an already cooked version like they do on TV. And, well, instead he finds a cake.
Thanks so much for joining us on Cooking with Brain Injury.
And tune in next week. We'll give other helpful and exciting tips to all you brain injured folks out there. You don't have to give up cooking after a brain injury, but you may have to give up eating if you cook like this.
Bill and Cheryl poke fun at themselves, but in a way that feels full of self-acceptance and love. Cheryl says that video was based on her own experiences in the kitchen. I wanted to get a better sense of what cooking is really like for her today and how it's changed. Did you used to get more pleasure from food?
Oh, I did. It used to be much more enjoyable to eat good food. And now I kind of don't care. I just want hungry feelings to be replaced with not hungry feelings because it is too hard to cook myself a beautiful meal.
To see how Cheryl's disability affects her relationship with food today, I asked her to record herself cooking a meal.
All right, I'm here in my little kitchenette, and I'm just going to make kind of a typical dinner for myself, which is whatever I can find in the fridge or hovering around on the counter. Just start with the basics, chop an onion. Can't get any more basic than that. I should probably heat up the pan first. I can't tell which is the front burner and which is the back burner from the pictures on there. So I usually just turn one on, and then I put my hand on the burner to see which one is hot. Try to do it really fast because otherwise you burn your hand if you don't do it fast.
Cheryl's difficulty matching the knob on the stove to the burner stems from the fact that she lost her mind's eye. That means she has trouble picturing things in her head. So like for me, when I look at the diagram on the front of the stove, I picture it laid over the top of the stove. In a split second, I lift up that diagram in my mind and lay it over the stove to see what knob matches what burner. Cheryl struggles with that.
My mind's eye went completely blank for a couple of years. If I wasn't looking at it, it did not exist, and I couldn't tell you how to do it. If somebody says something like, picture your happy place, there's literally nothing. Or give me directions from this bus stop to your house. I can't because I can't see the road in my head. I can't see the bus stop. There's nothing there. It is mostly back. It's a lot better, but just the ability to visualize things that I'm not actually looking at was gone for quite some time.
Cheryl's difficulty picturing things often creates frustration in the kitchen. Like when a recipe told her to flip a piece of salmon to salt the other side. That instruction, flip the salmon, just didn't register for her because she couldn't picture it. She parodied that moment in Cooking with Brain Injury, but when it happened in real life, it wasn't so funny.
I had 5 forks lined up on the counter. I got salt and pepper on one side of the fish. How do you get it on the other? The other side is down. How do you get salt? And I start taking all these forks and knives and laying them out, and I'm crying and I'm sobbing. It took 45 minutes to make that one piece of salmon, and I couldn't just piece it together that if you just stab it with a fork and flip it, then it's flipped.
What were you going to do with the forks?
That was just desperation. I gotta pull out the big guns here. What can I do? I couldn't come up with any solutions to finding the bottom of the fish. And so All I could think to do was just get more forks to see if some idea would come to me. And then at some point, 30 minutes into it, I did pick up the fish and flip it over. And then I started laughing because, oh my God, there's the other side of the fish. It was there the whole time. I didn't know. Surprise.
Losing your mind's eye, not being able to flip a piece of fish or figure out the burners, these are all aspects of Cheryl's disability that aren't immediately obvious to others. Some people have disabilities that are easily visible, like if a person uses a wheelchair, for instance. But as Cheryl says, her disabilities are invisible. You might not know from looking at her or talking to her that she has a traumatic brain injury. Ben Drew, who runs a company that creates online resources for disability support staff, explains it this way. When a disability is visible, some people may try too hard to help. They'll help when they're not asked to, and maybe even keep helping when asked to stop. People with invisible disabilities often experience the opposite. They find that others are oblivious to the need to make accommodations, and sometimes struggle to grasp that the disability is real. Like when, back before COVID, Cheryl would go to restaurants. She often couldn't understand what a server was saying over loud music and clanking dishes. She had to ask them to repeat it.
Universally, I get this eat shit look from them. Sometimes they won't repeat it, or sometimes they will, but they don't raise their voice, or they say it really fast. And I struggle keeping up with fast language, even in a quiet place. I don't think as fast as I used to, so that's hard. It's awful. I cry sometimes with the wait staff who won't just, you know, just say it again, but a little louder. That happens all the time. I don't go out to eat very much. That's one of the reasons.
Did you used to go out to eat more?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to go out to eat pretty regularly, but just the noise of restaurants, there's music playing, dishes clanging, people at the next table are talking, the person next to you is talking. It's so overwhelming. I can do it, but you can't expect me to do something else important that same day.
Back in the kitchen where Cheryl is cooking, she says this feeling can also be an issue at the supermarket.
I just got this spray oil because it was cheap. I don't like spray oil, but sometimes I just get overwhelmed at the store. And if I see something that looks vaguely like I want it, I'll just buy it instead of go look for the thing that I do want, like regular oil, because grocery stores are really crowded and full of colors and overwhelming. And okay, that burner's cold, so it must be the other burner that's on. Yeah, oh, yeah, the pan is hot. Okay, it's that one. Okay, the oil heats up, then you cut the onion. Oh my God, I don't know why I did that. That's a completely raw onion, but it's cool and refreshing. Probably shouldn't eat that. Mmm, it's tangy. Mm.
So why did you bite into that raw onion?
It's lack of impulse control. Not all brain injuries, but people who end up with disabilities from brain injury, lack of impulse control, you will almost always see that. And people think that the cortex, the big advanced outside layer of your brain, makes you smart. It doesn't. It's just a giant brake. It's a brake system. Everything under the cortex is like, ooh, I want to eat. Ooh, I want to do this. I got to do this. I'm going to punch this person. Whatever impulses. And your cortex stops you. But when you injure it, your brakes have worn down, or your brakes disengage sometimes, and you just eat raw onions, even though you know they're going to taste gross. You can't help it.
I could definitely relate to the taking a piece of food off the counter impulsively without thinking through whether or not it was going to taste good. Like, I actually once picked a crumb off my floor, the tile floor in the kitchen, and I was like, I just put it in my mouth without thinking about it to eat it off the floor, and it turned out that it was a loose piece of tile grout.
That's the best story I've heard all day.
I was like, this is not delicious at all.
Yeah, and I
Why
do that.
Did I do that?
Right? Guess you were focused on something else. Oh, yeah, it's awful when it turns out to be grout.
Coming up, Cheryl talks about how her friendships changed after her traumatic brain injury. Then she finishes cooking her meal and tells us how it tastes. Stick around.
Thank you. Time to cook up some advertisements.
Norwegian Cruise Line breaks the boundaries of global cruise travel. When you cruise with NCL, you're going to get award-winning specialty restaurants, a variety of food and beverage offerings, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. It is first class. These ships have all kinds of specialty restaurants, Brazilian steakhouse, French, Spanish, Italian, Japanese, Mexican. Select ships also feature al fresco dining on the waterfront and Ocean Boulevard, an oceanside promenade lined with bars and restaurants. Norwegian provides guests with truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Almost everything you'll eat is prepared from scratch by highly experienced chefs. And they got whatever you're going to be in the mood for. You want a quick casual family meal? They've got that. You want a beautiful four-course feast? They've got that too. And you can sip something delicious at one of up to 23 unique bar and lounge options per ship. Visit and explore exciting destinations around the world and enjoy unique experiences on board. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. Book your next adventure at ncl.com. Recently, I went into my closet to try to get a collared shirt out, and it occurred to me that I don't think I have bought a new collared shirt in 5 years. I mean, every shirt in there was either really old, or it had some kind of perma-stain situation, or it probably never fit right in the first place. I gotta freshen up a little bit here. It's time for something new, right? And spring is coming. Now is the time if you've been looking to refresh your wardrobe, home, or skincare and beauty routines this season. Because, you know, Walmart has genuinely surprising style finds that don't break the bank. This spring, there's only one destination for the latest fashion, home, and beauty inspired by real life. Walmart. I freshened up my wardrobe. I got some nice dress shirts, a couple light hoodies. You know, you need light hoodies for the springtime. Very useful, very comfortable. Discover surprisingly stylish new season favorites at Walmart now, or shop it all on the Walmart app. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending. Now trending, your style at Walmart. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. We have a dog. Her name is Sasha. She's almost four. She's a standard poodle. She's black and fluffy and soft and very adorable. And when we first got her, we took her to like this puppy kindergarten training class. The whole family went and, you know, they're teaching how to use the treats and all this. The trainer watched Sasha for a bit and said, she's very food motivated. And my daughter Emily turned to me and said, she's a Pashman. And so she is food motivated. And that's why we make a point of feeding Sasha high quality pet food. Founded in Hereford, Texas, Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. Real is Merrick's recipe, so they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And let me tell you something. When it's dinner time, Sasha is motivated, okay? She is highly motivated to come in from patrolling the backyard at dinner, to get up off the couch, whatever she's doing, she will drop it and come running. Check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third-generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. A few more quick pasta updates. I'm happy to report that last week we held a charity raffle. We raffled off 5 Cascatelli prize packs. And thanks to all of you who supported it, we raised nearly $30,000 for Feeding America, the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, and the National Black Farmers Association. So thank you so much. And hey, there's still a chance to win some pasta. We're giving away a special collection of various iterations and test versions of my pasta, things that will never be publicly available. To enter to win, just sign up for our newsletter by this Friday, April 9th. If you're already on our list, you're automatically entered. Sign up now at sporkful.com/newsletter. Finally, we're putting together a new episode for our Mission Impossible series, an update, and we want to hear from you. Do you have a specific question about the series or the pasta, something you're curious to hear more about? Record a voice memo on your cell phone, include your first name and where you're from, and send it to us at hello@sporkful.com. We might just play it in our update episode. Thanks. Okay, back to the show.
Oh, the tortilla. Oops. Well, that's burnt.
We're back in the kitchen with Cheryl Green, who's in the middle of cooking a meal at home. She's not following a recipe, just improvising based on what she has in the kitchen.
Okay, so the tortilla's burnt. It is completely like a big chip. Let's see what else I can add. Oh, I have some taco seasoning. I didn't even remember I had that. There is corn. Fake meat, fake chicken. Can add that in there. Oops, don't put the plastic bag on the cooktop because the cooktop is hot. Put some corn in there. I added it too early. The onions are not even cooked. Okay, well, timing is not my strong suit.
When you're cooking and things don't go the way you planned, sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes you laugh about it. I would think that you have to learn to let yourself off the hook, like not be too hard on yourself.
Absolutely. That's a huge part of it. Yeah. So part of that letting yourself off the hook is saying, you know what? My vision actually is distorted. Of course I'm having trouble seeing what this is. So that's part of why I eat so much frozen food. I'm not going to cook today because I don't want to screw it up, and I know I'm going to. Almost all my friends are disabled people, and I had the most wonderful models from these friends and people who I work with of what it means to live a disabled life and an accommodated life. They provided the model of how to just go about your life with an accommodation or go about your life, you know, needing somebody to help you with something. I believe there should be nothing embarrassing about using an accommodation for anything. There should be nothing embarrassing about saying, you know, because of my disability, I just can't do this thing. Do it for me, please. That's great. I think that's beautiful.
It says to brown the meat first. Then you put the seasoning mix together with water, and then you bring it to a boil. So I have basically raw onions, frozen, fake chicken, and it's now all covered in this taco seasoning mix powder. It is lumpy and disgusting. And okay. Well, let me add water now. It can't be that bad, can it?
Instructions on something like a packet of taco seasoning, that's another thing that can give Cheryl trouble.
I do struggle with reading, and especially if there's a sentence that has letters and numbers in it. Oh my goodness. And if people like write out a date in words, you know, like the 21st instead of in numbers, I can't find it. And I was trying to schedule a meeting with somebody over email, and she was doing like 3 p.m., but 3 and then capital PM. There was no colon 00 space PM. And I didn't see it. And I met at the wrong hour a week early. And I called her, where are you? She's like, I said in the email, we're meeting at 3 o'clock on such and such day. And I told her, but I can't see that. I've told you before. I need you to write it out super clear and put 3:00 space. And she said, I know, I just feel embarrassed, you know, helping you because it means that you're weak. And I don't want to think that, but when you ask for help, I'm afraid that you'll think that you feel weak. I'm like, oh my God, this is twisted. No, I'm not weak. I just can't read. So write the numbers out. And I've even had people tell me, I just don't believe you. I just really think, go ahead and push a little more. You can do it. You can do it. And it's this implicit bias that if you're disabled and you need help, it's because you're 100% incapacitated.
What happened to your friendships with non-disabled people when you acquired your disabilities?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. I lost most of my friends after the brain injury. Some of it was I So I have a ton of communication privilege. You know, I communicate in a pretty standard way. And I didn't for a while at the beginning. And a lot of people were really turned off by spending time with me because my communication was impaired.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, now I can. I couldn't back then. Early on, it would be things like, I would go to say something and I would accidentally say the wrong thing, which is fine. But I would stop and think, oh, no, that's not what I want to say. And so I'd go to say the correct thing, but I would say the wrong thing again verbatim, like a broken record. It's called perseveration. I would end up actually self-harming. I couldn't get out of this feedback loop. And I would, you know, like hit my head on the wall or bite my hand or anything to try to stop this. And sometimes I couldn't stop it. Somebody would have to say, stop talking. And then the other thing, just really to be fair, is my impulsivity and my rage issues and my anxiety and paranoia that were part of the early days, I think I pushed a lot of people away. And people get scared when they see brain injury because you look the same. Your face looks the same. Your body looks the same, but you say really weird stuff. Some people can't wait it out. Or because they've been so segregated from disabled people, they don't realize that they could make some modifications in how they communicate and still get along with you. It's because you haven't had the gift of being together.
Back in the kitchen, Cheryl is realizing that adding the water to the pan after adding the taco seasoning isn't going to do the trick. She was supposed to mix that powder with water before dumping it into the pan.
Oh, that's way too much powder. I hit the powder in my nose. This is why you mix it with water. It's disgusting. Oh, God. Ugh. Did I not clean this pan? I guess I didn't clean this pan. There's spinach in here now. I didn't put spinach in here. This is the kind of thing that you basically are glad that you're cooking, for one. Because if you gave this to somebody else, I probably would not get a second date. I mean, it's going to be edible, I'm sure of that, because it's made of food products, but... But it is edible. Only the tortilla's burnt. The onions are about halfway cooked, and the frozen stuff is no longer frozen anymore. So I would consider this a successful meal.
What's a failure?
My life. A failed meal?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're cooking this meal in this tape, every time you look at it, you're like, ooh, this looks pretty gross. And, you know, you don't sound especially excited to eat it. And yet when you do taste it, you say, I would consider this meal a success.
Yeah, I was lying. I was trying to show off for you. I thought it was a total failure. It was revolting. It was so disgusting. But I didn't have the fortitude to make something else, so I ate it for like 2 or 3 days. It was a total failure.
Hearing all this, you can probably understand why Cheryl sees food less as a source of pleasure, more as a thing she has to do to make the hungry feelings go away, as she put it. But a while back, when she ended up at a friend's house and they happened to be cooking,
I got to eat dinner with them and I loved it. And I thanked them and they thanked me for being served their food and for eating with them. So there, that pleasure is still there. Yes, if somebody else will do the cooking. And if you know anybody, Dan, I'm looking for somebody to come over and make me dinner. Just putting it, I know you got a national audience just in case.
When's the last time someone cooked you dinner?
Really long time. I don't know. Because my relationship just ended like 3.5 months ago. So, but when you ask when's the last time someone cooked me dinner and you want to know why my relationship ended, I don't know when the hell that guy cooked me dinner last. I don't know.
So he wasn't cooking you dinner anyway.
Mm-mm, he wasn't.
Well, screw that guy.
Seriously. You took a risk with that one, but it worked. Yeah.
On pleased to report that a few months after we recorded this interview, Cheryl met someone new. His name is Oliver, and he loves to cook. One of his specialties, according to Cheryl, salmon. My thanks to Cheryl Green, who continues to make documentaries. You can find more of her work at whoamitostopit.com. That's the name of her first documentary, Who Am I to Stop It? Her latest film, TBI and My Longest Ride, will be showing at the Portland Film by Bike Festival in May, so check it out there. We also have a link to Cheryl's short film, Cooking with Brain Injury, with audio description, on our website, sporkful.com. Thanks also to Ben Drew, founder of Open Future Learning, an online resource for disability support staff. Find more info at openfuturelearning.org. If you haven't checked out Mission Impossible, I hope that you will. It's a 5-part series where I set out to create a brand new pasta shape. And hey, if you already listened and liked it, please tell a friend. If you want to make sure you don't miss the next Mission Impossible update, please connect with our show in your podcasting app. In Spotify and Stitcher, click follow. In Apple Podcasts, subscribe. You can do it right now while you're listening. Thanks. This episode is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andre Sohara.
Our editor is
Tracy Samuelson.
The show is mixed by
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Alicia in Vermont, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.